You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, as you always are, here to the couch. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I have an amazing guest for you today. Everybody who's always tuned in to hear more about unique spiritual experiences and how that can enrich our lives, make us happier, really know more about who we are as beings and why we're here, fulfilling our purpose, etc. My special guest, as you can see her right next to me, is Dr. Karen Herrick, and she's written an amazing book. Karen, thank you so much for being here on the couch with me.
Thank you for having me. It's going to be fun.
Oh, this is going to be fun because you know I love this. The book, by the way, that she has written recently is called Psychology of the Soul and the Paranormal. So a lot of you people out there are saying, what's this about? What do you mean? Paranormal psychologists, therapists, people who have super education, just like Dr. Karen Herrick, don't talk about these things. What is this? Okay. This is going to help you today because you're going to learn a little bit more about the science behind what Karen is going to be talking about. Your soul, your so-called spiritual or exciting experiences that you've had and maybe have explored. So this is what we're talking about today. So let me just introduce you first of all, tell you more about her. Dr. Karen Herrick has many licenses. She's a PhD, LCSW, LM, SW, CADC, etc. And she is the founder of the Center for Children of Alcoholics. And Karen has shared her clinical expertise for 30 years in private practice by lecturing on dysfunctional, addictive homes, disassociation, grief, and loss. And her decades of research consists also of paranormal experiences that have been widely reported and also appear to be fairly common. Now, this phenomena she's talking about in her book have also been the subject of a psychical research for well over a century, and their existence is reasonably established, as you will check out in her book, with a lot of her studies and information. And with that being said, sorry about the long-winded. We could go on for another half an hour about all of your experience, Dr. Herrick, but thanks again for being here. So nice to have you.
You're welcome.
I love the extensive book. My goodness, so much, you know, information to take in. And I really also appreciate your references to the famous psychiatrists and psychologists who have contributed to this kind of research as well. Freud, Jung, Maslow, etc.
Right.
What was it that made you decide all of a sudden, you know what, I am going to write this book. I'm going to do this.
Well, I think it happens gradually, this process. And I was always interested in psychics and mediums. And I lived in California for a while. I've been married twice, married and divorced twice.
Yeah.
So in California, we would go to psychic fairs weekends, and I always had fun. And then I had my astrology chart read. And then after I got divorced, I had finished my education with my master's, and somebody recommended Edgar Cayce Foundation, which is in Virginia Beach.
Wow. Interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, he was our first American. Not first, but the one that people know about as a trans medium.
Right.
And so I started going down there for lectures and meeting, you know, great people. And education has been my thing, as you can tell from my business card. My father didn't believe in it, so I really rebelled.
there you go.
I know. So I got interested in Jungian psychology. And then the things about Jung that they didn't teach you in school, which was that his mother was psychic and his grandfather was psychic and would talk to his deceased wife at lunch with his second wife. And so Jung got to see these different levels of consciousness, right?
Yes.
And then William James and his wife lost a toddler child, a boy.
Right.
And Mrs. James in Massachusetts went to these mediums and then dragged William James along. And then he got interested in mediums, which he called mental healers. And he and his kids would study them at Massachusetts General.
Wow.
And that's not in anything.
No, no, we don't learn that in the textbooks in our psychology courses, do we?
I know, and it's so valuable to people.
Oh, it absolutely is. So, I mean, and again, the references that you share in your book are, I mean, it just blew my mind. I didn't even realize that Dr. Kubler-Ross on death and dying, you know, she was the expert on the different phases of loss and grief that we would experience. She even had... You know, she said, oh, no, this is real. And what Jung is talking about and what all these other people, this is a real thing. This is a phenomenon, near-death experiences, etc. So also what was fascinating to me is as a therapist, you go back into other people's upbringings and their environment. So I was fascinated with you and the stories that you tell about your life.
Okay. And
can you share with us a little bit about your early environment that sort of created you to be this soul that's so much more interested in spiritual experiences?
Well, I was raised in an alcoholic home in upstate New York, and my father was a truck driver and he drank all the time. And I was the oldest of three children.
Yeah.
And my brothers were 4.5 and 5.5 years younger. So they were like Irish twins. And
right.
I would do a lot of walking in upstate New York. I mean, then you could just run outside and you were gone for 4 hours and nobody cared where you were.
Right.
And I was walking in the woods and I loved nature. And my mother was Catholic and my father was Protestant, but we were raised Protestant, which is unusual.
That is.
And my mother didn't drive. So she never... I remember as a teenager saying, you know, you really have a problem. I mean, I was probably oppositional about this. And you really should talk to a priest because we have fish sticks every Friday and we're not Catholic. Why do we have to? Now, I love fish sticks, but it was just, you know, the point of the thing. So I was always, I guess, a little bit of a troublemaker as far as my thoughts. And that if I ever got married and I found I was married to an alcoholic, I would get divorced. I remember saying that at 12. You know, why are we staying here?
Right. Absolutely.
So I was married early at 18 and I had a daughter and then another daughter. And that marriage lasted about 10 years. And then my second marriage, I married an alcoholic. So, and I didn't realize, of course, because alcoholism looks different.
Sure, it does.
And so my father went to a bar and, you know, didn't come home till 3 or 4 in the morning. And my ex-husband would come home every night at 6 o'clock, but go straight to the bar in the library.
Ah, okay.
And he was a salesman and he said he needed to, you know, have a few drinks for business. Blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
So in all of that, I guess I didn't really believe there was a God because I felt like most kids in an alcoholic family, it's too messy down here.
Right.
And I don't think God's really interested in us.
Right. Sure.
But I believed in nature, something like the American Indians, you know, the wind and there's a plan about this somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then I got some education and started my private practice. Oh, because when I went to Rutgers, that was the only university in the country that had a minor in alcohol studies. And I took it.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And I thought, well, my father drank and my husband drank. So let me take this. And it was my whole life that she was explaining.
Right. Interesting.
So, yeah, it really was. So then I went to a local college and I gave a course on alcohol health and human behavior for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted people to know what alcoholism was before they had to get a master's degree.
Right.
Because now we're more educated.
Right.
You know,
yes, absolutely.
We're not.
Right, exactly.
And then in one of my conferences, a lady told me that I should, if I liked, Claudia Black was a big art therapist in alcoholism field. and she wrote a book for kids. Mm-hmm. And I was at a conference that where she was speaking. And then this lady I met for tea, just never met her again. She said, if you like Claudia Black, you'll love Jacqueline Small, who teaches from Texas. And so right. as life would have it. And I really do believe Carl Jung has this rule that chance rules.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. That's right.
And about 6 months later, I get a brochure that Jacqueline Small is going to be in Connecticut the same week that my youngest child is going to be at sleepaway camp. And I think, well, I could go. Right.
Yes. Right.
So I call up and they say, oh, well, it's a 9-month training program and you need $5,000, which I didn't have. And no. I said, well, no, I didn't really, you know, plan on that. Well, if you there's a guaranteed student loan and if you apply, you'll get it. Really? Ooh. All right. Well, send me the paperwork. So I'm driving to Connecticut that morning in August thinking, what am I doing? I could be home, have my house all to myself for a week. Right. Anyway, I get there and there's a lady outside looking at the tree and she's saying something like, I was a tree like this in my past life.
What?
Yeah. So I'm thinking, what did I do here? What did I do?
Right.
So it was at a former nunnery and in Connecticut on the water. It was beautiful. And this nun said to me, well, you're early. Do you want to see your room and you could maybe take a nap? I said, sure.
Yeah.
So she takes me to the room. And she said it's in the lion's wing. So I thought L-I-O-N-S. So
right,
when we got there, it was L-Y-O-N-S, which is one of my great-great-grandmother's maiden names. Oh. So all along, I believed in signs.
Right. Sure.
And anyway, so that was on transpersonal psychology, which included Carl Jung. And then they did some holotropic breath work, which I had no idea what that was.
Right.
And so Sunday we started studying and then Wednesday we're to lay down and breathe to music, which activated your chakra system.
Absolutely. Yes.
And we're told not to think, just breathe. So I follow directions. So it was probably the first time in my life I was told not to think. And because that had been my survival, really. Right. Because you come from an alcoholic home, you want control. So you're always thinking about
you're hypervigilant, you know, as to what's going on all the time, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So I laid down and I breathed to music and I had another breath come into my body. And I thought, whose breath is that? And then I thought, don't think, just breathe. So then I breathed and the breath breathed. And then after that, I felt like I had to push on my feet. You pick a partner to be there just to give you water or whatever. And so he pushed on my feet, but he didn't do it right. But then the trainers came over. They pushed on my feet. And one of the trainers got behind me.
Yes.
And said, hold on and push. I had no idea what we were doing, but I pushed.
Right.
And the thought I had then was, where is my mother? And I thought, why are you thinking that? And then I thought, don't think.
Yeah, sure. Right.
I thought this whole thing had taken 20 minutes and it had taken about 4 hours. So I had a spiritual experience and I felt the Holy Spirit, which took me about a year and a half to figure out.
We were
supposed to stand up after that and then not talk to anybody and go in another room and draw in a mandala, which is a circle.
Right.
Which Jungian says, complete your wholeness of an experience that you've just had. So I drew a flower and the cloud and the grass and sunshine. And then we went to lunch because food then will ground you.
Yes.
But I really felt weird because I'd been in another state.
Sure. You know,
anyway, you came back and then we sat in a circle and everybody that breathed had showed their pictures.
Right.
And so the professor said, well, you had a rebirth.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I thought, well, yeah, because now I know there's a God. And I really did feel connected to all these strange people. Right. And then I knew we were connected to everybody in the world.
Yes. Yes.
And it was wonderful, but it was also confusing.
Sure it is.
Because nobody said you can have these things happen to you.
Right. Exactly. Especially growing up. And especially there was the dogma of the religious belief systems that were a little confusing as well. So, That's right. Oh my goodness.
We were very confused. Yes.
So you just sort of blossomed and really began exploring these things and really, of course, studying Jung and working eventually on your dissertation for your PhD
right.
with Dr. James Moody, who, I mean, come on, people, you know the near-death experience, NDE. He's really the founder and his famous book, Life After Life, right?
That's right.
Incredible. And you got to work with him, and he was one of your professors. So
he was, yes.
Maybe we can segue into the idea, because you start out sort of talking about the soul.
Yes.
You know, I'm trying to describe to readers what that's about and all of the studies behind that as well. And that dates back to centuries, you know, of knowledge.
Yes. Plato, Socrates, they all talked about the soul.
Aristotle, they were all it. That's right. And it wasn't woo-woo stuff. It was more, these people were also exploring that same thing that you did of just not thinking and getting out and you know, getting in touch with something outside of the 3D.
And believing, yes, that you had another body. So right. So the news is that we have two bodies as humans. Mm-hmm. We have a spiritual body mm-hmm. and a physical body that we're in. And so we're both physical and spiritual. And the soul is the spiritual part of you.
Uh-huh.
And it comes in utero when you are conceived. And it starts to grow in your body. There's an atom placed in your body, and that's the soul.
Yes, and yes, yes.
So the spiritual body grows as you are growing. So you're having a little miniature person, or uh-huh. it's not really a person, it's like an egg shaped. Uh-huh. But and then I believe that when you leave your body to have a near death, what happens, or when you're dying, this is uh-huh. when you usually meet your soul, when you're dying. And so what happens is your vagus nerve, which is the 10th and longest nerve in your body, starts at the top of your head and goes down to your stomach.
Right.
Becomes a highway in which this egg-shaped spiritual body that houses your soul, because your soul is created, it's not born.
Right.
And so it has to go back. And that's the whole purpose of the spiritual body, to take the soul up out of you into the ether, where it will be a spirit on the other side when you're dead. So you don't die, you just become different, right? And
right, exactly.
So the soul, Jung believed, was yourself, and the soul was in the bottom of your unconscious, and that your unconscious was the ground for these different types of spiritual experiences.
So they're hidden within, and it perhaps is the same, because Jung and Freud collaborated and everything, but it's the same subconscious where we suppress. We're not really, it's not, so we can survive. It's not in the beta, you know, consciousness. So we're more, it's suppressed, so we can actually live in these bodies and sort of, you know, get about the world. But when we are dying or passing out of our bodies, then it is activated in the subconscious to sort of, to move on.
There's an automatic process, and Robert Monroe talks about it a little in his books, and then also a gentleman named Sylvan Muldoon in 1929. They both did have left their bodies, not to have spiritual experiences, just to leave their bodies and come back.
That's
what they did, right?
Yeah.
And they're not the only ones. Other people just took people's stories of leaving their bodies. And so they've been doing this for, you know, 100 to 200 years.
Right. You know, it's funny, I was listening to, now you talked about the soul, you know, as a separate part coming into the body. I was listening to some regression tapes. You know, Dolores Cannon, she's written 20 books, right? She's known as the hypnotherapist that really regressed people, and you taped so many of these sessions. And what she found is people were dipping back into their past lives, etc., and then how they came about in this life. And what she was saying is that we choose many times, a lot of her subjects, a large percentage said that we choose to come into certain bodies and family situations when we're in the, wherever that is, with God or in between.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? Is that our choice?
I think we all choose our parents.
Okay.
because we need that situation in order to grow. Because as Jung would say, there's a trial by fire in life. And right. That's your job, is to, number one, find out your soul purpose. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps mine was to leave an alcoholic family mm-hmm. and not put up with that.
Yes.
Excuse me. And so, yes, I believe that you choose your parents. And I do believe in reincarnation, which Jung believed in. And yes. So that we have more than one life.
Yes.
Because it takes more than one life to really develop a soul.
Yes, I agree. And I also was interested in why the amnesia in life after life. Why is that? Well, supposedly, I guess we wouldn't learn anything if we knew all about the past life. Then maybe we have to have this new experience or repeat it again in order to really get it.
Sometimes. Yeah, I think sometimes you do repeat it again, right?
Right. So we do that. And so our souls grow with our family story, I guess, as you and your history, and we all, you know, sort of do that. So how do you help clients in your practice develop their own soul's purpose?
Okay. So what I teach them is that in your unconscious, you have five layers of your unconscious. Now, Freud just said it was a receptacle for sexual repression and family memories.
I don't know that, but I don't know. I'm not. I never really bought into that. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, that's all right. And it really, it's not enough. You know, I don't think.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's not. Come on. I want more. I just don't want to blame it on sexual repression. So.
Well, and that's why he and Jung broke up, was that after 6 years of being buddies.
Yep.
And after four, they were kind of splitting anyway.
Yeah.
Because Jung kept saying there's more in the unconscious than just sex.
Yeah.
And people have more interest in that.
Yes.
But Freud was very, you know, dogmatic. And if you didn't agree with him, you know, he just kicked you out. So eventually, after 6 years, Jung wrote a book and he sent it to Freud. And he said, from your disobedient servant. And 3 days later, Freud wrote a letter back saying, I want nothing to do with you. Our friendship never mattered. And, you know, and for, and then Jung answered back 3 days later, well, I don't want to be friends with anybody who doesn't want to be friends with me. So they did not have a nice ending. And they never spoke again.
I guess. Yeah. Wow. Never. That's amazing. I guess Freud didn't know about personality disorders yet, did he?
No. All they agreed on was that the unconscious was made of complexes. Right.
Right.
Exactly. So it was, and then Jung's psychology eventually sometimes was called in the beginning complex psychology before it became analytical psychology.
Oh, very good. Yes.
So
yes.
Jung said there were five layers. So the first layer is your life and what happened to you.
Uh huh. Okay.
Second layer is your parents' lives and how that affected you. Third layer is your DNA or your ancestors. And he believed that your ancestors left jobs for you to complete. And but I mean, nobody told us that, right?
Right.
So that was one thing that he did with clients, was he studied genealogy. So I do all this with a client. So first you find out their life, and then you find out how their parents affected you. And then maybe do a little research as to, you know, maybe sometimes they have, like many times I've taught people that, you know, you have psychic ability.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah, well, not everybody knows when somebody's going to die. Do you really think that's normal?
Right.
I don't know when somebody's going to die, but you have a sense, and then you get yelled at for that. You know, what are you saying? Right.
Especially.
No, they'd rather be just the weird one in their family and not put a name on it.
Right.
So, but anyway, so did anybody in your family have psychic ability? Well, my grandmother used to play with tea leaves. Okay. Well, that's interesting, right? But anyway, so these kinds of things I ask questions about. And then the fourth layer was your culture or your country. So how did that affect you?
Right. That makes sense.
Then your fifth layer is your soul / self, which we know very little about.
Right.
So mostly when we've gone through all those layers and we get down to the soul / self of people who are interested, because not everybody who comes in here wants to know about spirituality.
Right.
So just the ones who are interested. And many come. And since I started out doing alcoholic families, lots of times they come after they've they are recovering in AA or NA, and they want more. Then I want more than just this life.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think we have found that people that come from traumatic families, they have the ability to disassociate easier in their childhood. So then if they have a cardiac operation or if they're in an auto accident, they tend to disassociate easier and they would have more spiritual experiences than someone who didn't grow up in a traumatic home.
Right. And they're more resilient perhaps to chaos around them. And they just sort of, would it be fair to say that they've learned how to cope and numb out because of the chaos in the environment? So,
right. They've learned how to be confused.
Okay.
So, like for me, it was a year and a half of what happened to me.
Right.
And so you read and you read, and then clients come in with these even more spectacular stories than I had. And I believe them because, hey, I had one and nobody told me I was supposed to do that. They don't tell you that this is part of a higher intelligence or God, whatever you want to call it, that your soul is in charge of you waking up at some point. And that can happen at any time. Your soul really chooses the kind of spiritual experience you're going to have.
Yes. Well, No, that makes sense.
Doesn't it?
It makes sense. So I was just going to ask you, and also I know you elaborate on a lot of these things in your book, but also just sort of jumping off that, do we create different scenarios as well for ourselves in order to test ourselves? I guess
I would think
in your case, the alcoholic husband's coming into your life. And so you could say, wait a minute, snap out of it, Karen. Come on. Don't do this anymore.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So that,
and then that takes years to get out of.
Absolutely. Yeah. It sure does.
But I find that when you go through the thing that is the hardest thing, like I never planned on, raising three kids by myself, but that's what I had to do.
My goodness.
Right?
Well, bless
and
your
so
heart.
Bless when,
your
you,
heart.
When you do that and you realize you live through it, then you can really start to live.
Yes. Absolutely. Isn't that lovely? By the way, in case you guys just joined us here, I'm talking to an amazing woman. She has written a book called The Psychology of the Soul and the Paranormal. And Karen is a doctor of psychology, of course, but she also has so many different licenses and she practices. Is your practice in New York?
It's in New Jersey.
New Jersey. Oh, okay.
Red Bank, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Great. But anyway, we're talking about this book, which is just really amazing because what I appreciated about it was when I read it, you really address so many different facets of our spiritual essence that we are not taught growing up. We are certainly not taught that by therapists, psychologists, counselors, unless they're religious counselors, let's just say. But then that will be kind of tilted toward that particular religion. And there's nothing wrong with that at all either. But what you're saying is so many of these things have been studied, these spiritual experiences, whatever they may be. So you talk about in your book, soul, what it's for, the purpose, our own purpose in our life, near-death experiences, which I'd love to explore as well. Also, you talk about enlightenment, how we can learn certain things, purposes that we have in our lives. You talk about mediums as well. And fascinating information about that, because I know that you have experienced that as well with people who have really blown you away and that are sort of the real deal. So let's talk about near-death experience. Let's talk about that because, that's another profound part of, is that our soul leaving our body or our astral body? What is that all about?
Yes. Well, your astral body contains your soul.
Oh, okay.
So it's called astral, etheric. It has many names, resurrection body, you know.
Okay.
It probably has like 12 or 13 that I put in the book there. And wow. Which is one of the problems of spirituality. We need to consolidate, you know, some of the
right
material.
Yeah.
So that at a certain time, whether you're in an automobile accident or a fall, and you just leave your body, and they, and then the biggest thing that they think when they leave their body
right.
is, and they look at, down at their body,
right?
Oh, I'm not dead.
Yes. Yeah. What a, or huh?
I'm still me.
Right. Right.
Is this what they were worried about? This is what they were worried about.
Right.
And so, so many people don't even know they're afraid of death. If they just would watch, you know, something about near death experiences, like on Netflix, they have a surviving death.
Yes.
Right. And the first
That's excellent.
Isn't
That's
that good. Excellent? Yeah.
Love that.
So 5 1-hour shows. And the first one is on near death experiences.
Yes.
If you just watch that.
Yeah.
And they're all PhDs. So now, yes, it's great. We know PhDs have these things, but also normal people are having them. And like 40 to 50% of the population in the United States and England are having spiritual experiences of some type. And
yeah.
they're afraid to talk about them.
Sure. Sure.
So of course I'm big on educating them, right?
Yes. Yes, you are.
So anyway, so they leave, they yeah. go up into the etheric world.
Right.
And, They see the beautiful flowers, the light. They might see their dead loved ones. Their animals are there,
mm-hmm.
dogs
right.
and cats and horses, I understand. So yeah. It's just beautiful. And they all have different stories. And there's many, many books on Amazon written by near-death survivors. And you can read them.
Yes, they are. And they're and like you said, many of them... They're not kooks. I mean, they're you know, reporting, and there's so many, as you also mentioned, people who have had these experiences. They don't want to talk about it because they don't want people to look at them like they're crazy, you know?
Right.
But they don't want to be ridiculed, you know? So, I mean, that's really, so it's a real phenomenon. And no matter how many people refute it, or the scientific community many times trying to say, well, it's just your, you know, body, it's your survival mechanism. It is, you're not leaving your body, you're not seeing, but all the stories of people who I've talked to, who I've interviewed, who were looking at the surgeries being done on them and saying, why are these doctors doing, and they're watching everything that's going on. And this redheaded nurse ran down the hall and went and got, how do you know all these things are going on? Well, I went out of my body and I watched you before you, you know, you saved me and came back to breath again. So,
and it's wonderful. Right. But then they're so afraid of it.
Right.
It takes, I understand that the average time it takes a near deather to say to another person they've had it is 7 years.
Wow. Interesting.
That's a long time, right? To it walk sure around is. Not understanding. And,
oh my goodness.
And so like you mentioned, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, well, PMA Chatwater, who is a female who has written about childhood near death experiences.
Right.
She was sitting in an airport one day and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was next to her, but she didn't know that. And she was sitting there and she had 3 near-death experiences. And and she just said something. I can just imagine PMH doing this.
Right.
You know, I left my body. I don't understand it. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said, well, you had a near-death experience.
Right. Exactly.
And isn't that a wonderful thing to have happened?
Yes. Isn't
but
that?
Yeah. Most near-death people, 79% of them get a divorce at some point after.
Yes.
Because their spouse, their relatives, they don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear that story anymore.
Right. And you know, also the person feels, as you describe in your book, Psychology of the Soul and the Paranormal, people are a little more enlightened and open to different experiences. And when their partner doesn't get it, it's just not happening. They're on the same page. And there's, of course, no communication. And you also emphasize the importance of that communication in your book as well.
Right. It's important that our eyes be open now. And I think we need it now more than any other time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we really do. There are changes happening. Of course, everybody's hearing about them and whatever. But, you know, they say, oh, for years they said that, you know, catastrophic things, of course, read the Bible. And yeah, of course. But the consciousness of human, Homo sapiens sapien, the consciousness is changing all over the world. And it just seems like it's becoming more black and white, divided. Either you're on a higher vibe or however you want to say that, higher frequency, or in a more spiritual place and open to receiving information, or you're into murder and mayhem and you're, you know, joining in the forces to invade a country because you want to eliminate a population.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that kind of thing. So do you see that happening in the world right now?
There has to be more, I think, than just material, materialism, and people want more. They really do. They just don't know what exactly it is. Like the near death people, when they come back, they want better relationships. They don't know how to get them. Yes. But what I think they do is eventually start out. Well, some of them, why their marriages don't last is they decide, well, I don't want to be an architect anymore. I want to work at a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, right. That's going to lower your salary like 2/3. And your wife or, you know, or your husband isn't happy about that.
Right, right. No.
But that's what I want. I want my life to be simpler.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes. Let's talk about, in this day and age, dealing with the ego. Okay. You suggest that we must first go beyond our egos and to educate them so that it'll have incorporated more from our unconscious in any spiritual experiences that we've had. Okay, so how do we learn to let go of our ego? And what is defined as the ego to you? How do you define that?
The ego is anything you put after I am. And that's an exercise I use many times with clients. I'll ask them to work on for weeks and weeks an I am list.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then just keep it going, you know, good and bad. And lots of times, like my ego didn't know that you could have another breath come into your body. So that then I had to read other things and to teach my ego, hey, people have done this before. People have felt this breath before. Listening to near-death people when I went to a near-death conference. And those are some of the happiest people in the world. They're not afraid of dying because they already did.
Right.
And they came back.
Exactly.
And it's wonderful. Be with them. So, so that's beyond ego. So it's like this ego thinks, oh, that shouldn't have happened to me. And I must be crazy. Well, no, I don't think so. Because a lot of other things I heard in that circle sounded really weird. Right.
Yes.
But those people weren't crazy. We're all just investigating what happens when you let go. Number one, of your ego, that's what you're letting go of when you don't think.
And that's your identity of who, your identity of all these labels that you assign to yourself.
Yes.
So when you say, I am blank, or sure, it's part of your identity in this three-dimensional body and what you've chosen to do and all that, but kind of you need to let go of that to become one with and tune into the higher self.
Yeah, it's like disidentifying from past values because you get new ones.
Right. But when people are saying, let's just say affirmations, and they're doing their 21-day reiteration of, I am strong, I am healthy. That's not what you're talking about, the I am ego. You're talking about...
Well, affirmations can be a part of it. Now, one thing I teach with affirmations is you can't just say, I am strong.
Right.
I am strong. My therapist wants me to say this. I am strong.
Right.
you have to believe you are strong.
Exactly.
And in some area. So, and then you have to say, I am strong with this situation and I'm going to get it better.
Yes.
Now. That's what I say. Always put now. I'm going to do it now.
I love that. Yes.
And then when you say a prayer or sometimes I just talk to, different people from my family who are over on the other side. Mm-hmm. And I ask them for help. mm-hmm. with this situation. And the simplest prayer is, give me what I need to get what I want.
That's beautiful.
So selfish.
Yeah.
But it's really what people want.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Give me what I need to get what I want. Right. Show me how to do this.
Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. And then the other thing is to get yourself in a different place.
Right.
Because nobody's going to come to your house when you're on the couch under a blanket and say, hey, guess what? We have a chance for you.
Right.
They're not going to do that. You got to get yourself to different places. So get yourself to a meeting, to a therapist's office, mm-hmm. To watch a film and get somebody you can discuss it with. And what do you think, you know?
Right, exactly. And also, you know, talking about asking for help, and you talked about your ancestors or relatives who you vibe with or that are, you believe we can tune into them and really, I mean, I talk to my parents all the time who are,
okay.
I think they've gone on to higher adventures. I think they're having a blast in another, perhaps on another planet or something. I don't know. But but I always talk to them, you know, because I say, hey, if you're around, can you give me the strength to be more loving towards another relative?
Yes.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And they're there. They'll so when like the Kevin Costner movie about baseball, you know, if you ask, they will come or something, whatever the
build
word.
The field and they will come. Yes.
Oh, there you go. So that's it. So you have to sort of, so that's really sort of tuning into that energy and focusing on that and asking for the help.
Well, yes, because if your loved ones have passed the other side, they are now a spirit. Now, right. Spirits can't talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
They send us thoughts.
Right.
So lots of times you'll get thoughts that aren't yours, really.
Right.
And it's I had an interesting thing with trying to trust your own thought. Right. I was at a conference in the city, you know, I had all my clothes and good jewelry and a computer and all this, and put it in the car and go down to, I don't know, if it was Chinatown or the lower part of Manhattan. And we're going to have lunch and then go home. And I, as soon as we parked the car, I said, this car is going to be robbed. And I said, no.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, let's just go to New Jersey and, you know, eat on the water. No. But we just got a parking space. We planned this all week. Oh, okay. So I allowed myself to be talked into that. We come back from shopping, throw everything in the car, get to New Jersey, open the trunk, it's completely empty.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
So then I thought,
you knew it. Yeah.
That little voice should be louder.
Right.
That was what I thought about for a couple of days. Right. Then I thought, right. No, Karen, maybe you should be quieter. And
maybe
if you had listened and stood up for yourself, you still have all your favorite things, right?
You're right.
So that was a big lesson about a little voice.
Love it.
Because we all have that little voice.
Boy, we have to turn down the noise, don't we? So that high beta consciousness, whatever, as Dr. Joe Dispenza would say, that's going on constantly. You know, we have to turn that volume down a little bit, and breathe it through and allow that information to come through. And listen to, because we all have that higher inner voice.
We do. Right, we do.
But we choose to ignore it. And we have to have certain experiences, which may be unpleasant, etc. But so there are other helping spirits out there you talk about in your book. Are there just random, I guess, spirit guides we have, do you believe? Or is it primarily our relatives who have been close to us, who are on the other side, who come to help?
Well, you have your guardian angel, and,
okay.
and you have a spiritual guide that's supposed to be assigned to you for life. And I don't know, like, why did they pick, you know, that poor guy?
That would be boring. That's what I was thinking.
Be watching me. Right. So, and I don't know my spiritual guide's name. You know, everybody says, oh, you have to get to know that. Well, okay. Well, maybe someday I will. But I've been working with a medium too, and in England. Uh-huh. And
yeah.
She says that, like, she says that William James comes in when we work together. Carl Jung comes in. She said all these people that you really believe in,
right,
are actually there to help you. Now, that's a stretch, you know.
Right.
But I was thinking, you know, they died so long ago. And if somebody's actually talking about them now, why wouldn't they be following me? Right.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, so in spiritual, you know, in when I'm reading, I try to say, all right, Carl, let's see. What do you think about this one? You know, and, I mean, I just have fun with it.
Sure.
But I have watched her, and she has all kinds of famous people come into her. And Jung did too. When Jung writes in the Red Book, which is a 12-pound book, and he wrote all of his dreams, rewrote them in this Red Book, and drew the pictures. If you've never seen it, go to a library and see if you could look at it.
It's mind-blowing.
Isn't it?
Right.
Anyway, he talked to, I mean, his mother, his father came to him in dreams. And famous people came. Ezekiel came from the Bible, and Salome, who, you know, had John the Baptist's head cut off. So not very nice people could come to you.
No, that's right. That's right. And it's just, maybe it's for just information, and you have to observe it and say, okay, what does this mean to me? I guess, what are all these things happening?
And symbolically, it stands for something that you need to know.
Right.
But see, that's another thing. Then we get into dream interpretation.
Yes, exactly. Right. And I've always been a more practical in my, not talk about my stuff, but I mean, I never really vibed again to Freud's sexual, you know, unfulfilled wishes kind of stuff about sexuality that dreams meant and certain phallic symbols, etc. Everything was a phallic symbol to Freud.
It was.
I think my dad comes into my dreams a lot lately.
Does he?
He's very present. He's very there. It's very real. He was a man of few words, but intense in a mellow way.
Right, right.
And I, you know, he'll be there in a situation or whatever. So I know that he's there saying, heads up, things are coming your way, get strong, or I'm here with you. I just sort of have incorporated that. And would you say that that's what's happening when a lot of familiar relatives come into your dreams?
Yes. And if you're getting thoughts that aren't yours,
right.
And I always try to give it a, if I get the same thought three times and it, now that sounds crazy, right?
Right.
Then it's not my thought. See, that's another thing. So
yes.
You have to be quiet enough to know what are your thoughts and what is this voice, not voice all the time, but just something that just a gut feel that tells you you should do that. Go ahead, do that. And
All right,
I'll do it. And so then I do it.
Yes. And right. And if it doesn't turn out right, okay, whatever. But it was interesting that you were actually open to it and attuned to it and aware that it's there for a reason, perhaps, you know, in your life. So what is the best way people can find out more about you, Dr. Karen Herrick, and get your book, Psychology of the Soul and the Paranormal?
Well, they can get my book on Amazon.
Sure.
And then there's another little book, Grandma, What's a Soul? That talks.
Oh, I love that book, too.
My grandson didn't want me to die, so I talked to him about what would happen when I died. And there's a section for parents. And then if you're living in an alcoholic home, there's You're Not Finished Yet.
Yes.
And you could read that one. But and then what else did you ask me? Oh, I know. My website, KarenEHerrick.com.
Right.
Has a lot of free interviews on there.
Yes. Exactly.
And stuff. They can get information and listen to me if they want to.
Oh, wonderful. Exactly. You are such a great guest. It's about that time. We have to wrap already. I can't believe it. It's gone so
fast.
We're in the moment and it's just going by so quickly. There is no time, I guess, right?
Right. That's right. We're in the now.
That's it. We're in the quantum realm. No more Newtonian.
Right.
Thank you so much for being here and for sharing your wisdom, Dr. Herrick.
You're entirely welcome. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. And bless you and onward and upward.
Okay. You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. Once again, another amazing guest, Dr. Karen Herrick, author of Psychology of the Soul and the Paranormal. Pick it up. It's a vast array of information. It's not a woo-woo kind of psychology, spiritual. It really has a lot of research that's been done into certain spiritual experiences. You'll love it. All right. Take care of yourself first, as I always say, and then you'll be good for other people in your lives. And I'll see you next week here on the couch. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.